I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Zone Time, a wonderful hockey show on the internet. If you're hoping to hear our thoughts on the new Drake album or the new song from Beyonce, there's something else we're looking forward to hearing a review from, but we'll get to that before the end of the podcast. In the meantime, Justin Cuthbert is here, Omar is here, Sam is here, I'm Julian. The Stanley Cup Final, still on. It's a series now. A lot of people were ready to write off the Tampa Bay Lightning, but they found a way into game three, may have finally entered the Stanley Cup final chat. But I'm just curious though, from everybody here, be honest, did you think before game three this series was already over? Be honest, be honest, because a lot of people wrote off the Tampa Bay Lightning. Not me.
If you thought that the Avs were going to sweep the Lightning and that they were going to win the cup with only two losses to the St. Louis Blues, like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Be reasonable.
Honestly, like, you can't freaking negate who Tampa is. Like, yeah, you know, Colorado had two solid games, but like, that game happened and I knew they were going to win game three. Now the way it happened, I was a little surprised at, and I guess we'll get to that as we continue talking. I didn't think it would happen that way, but yeah, like, you can't, like, a team like Tampa, they've done too much to write them off after a big playoff blowout. So, I didn't think it was over at all.
Yeah, I'm not really surprised that Tampa won the game, but I kind of would be surprised if Colorado didn't win one of the two games in Tampa Bay. It doesn't strike me as that type of series where it's like going to be whoever's on home ice owns it. Like, I think Colorado, I picked Tampa at the start. So I'm like threatening to be wrong in so many different ways here, but after watching those first two games, it just looked like Colorado was like really, really fast and problematically fast, if that makes sense. I would be surprised if Tampa won both games after in Tampa Bay after what we saw from Colorado in games one and two. And I think Colorado five still on the table, and that would be dominant, but it wouldn't be a sweep. Like, I guess is not on the table anymore, obviously.
Like, I don't know. It's just, did people forget what Tampa did in the third round against the Rangers down 2-0? And I understand the Rangers are not Colorado, but they've done this before. They've come back from a 2-0 deficit. Did people forget the first round series where they got spanked a bunch of times by the Leafs and they still found ways to win the very next game? Like, if there's one thing we should learn from this year's Stanley Cup playoffs, just because a team gets shellacked or provides a blowout win in one game, it does not always mean that that style of play or whatever momentum is being generated there will translate over to that very next game, especially when it comes to a team like Tampa that has the best goalie in this series, has some great defense play, and they have all those forwards up front. Like, I picked Colorado to win, and I still think Colorado could still win this series, but I was very surprised at how many people wrote off Tampa before game three. People were just like, man, this is over. This is like 96. Where Colorado got the sweepers in, like, nah, like this is Tampa. This is not Montreal. Yeah. This is Tampa.
I think what it is that a lot of people, and you saw it a lot after game two, there's like a slow growing, but like slowly getting louder crowd that discounts the two cups Tampa won. they call them asterisk cusps, because the 2020 was the bubble and then 2021 was like the weird season or whatever. So a lot of people like discount those cups like completely. And I think what happened after game seven, and again, I think even tying back to things that I was saying last episode, and that I think Colorado might be the strongest team Tampa's faced like in this like run of like playoff success. I think people are kind of taking that and seeing like, aha, see, it's no like there's no asterisk playoff schedule. This is a legitimate team. So ha, they're done for. So I think that's where a lot of the, you know, the series is done after game two is coming from. But you know, I don't know. I'm not going to say like, you know, that they're like tears of like hockey fandom or whatever, but like, again, like I'm high on Tampa. I think Tampa is probably, I did think that Tampa's going to win this series, but by no means did I think the series is over after game two, because both teams have done way too much. And again, Tampa swept Florida without Braden Point.
Like it was nothing.
Like it was nothing. Three goals against. Like, come on. They deserve a lot more credit than that.
I was frankly more surprised the first two games that they weren't able to slow down the Avs at all. Like, to me, that was more shocking than them winning game three. Like, they looked outrageously slow. Like, it didn't look like they belonged on the same ice. And so this game made it a series, which is what we wanted, right? Like, as funny as it would be for me as an Avs fan to see the Avs sweep, I'd rather this be a series.
We all
and would. that was the Vasilevsky game too. Like, it was actually, it was more the Kemper game than the Vasilevsky game. Vasilevsky was awesome down the stretch. 37 of 39 is this sort of stuff we expect from Andre Vasilevsky against a team like Colorado. But I think there was always going to be a Kemper stinker built into this series. I mean, I think he allowed 8 on 13. Not that we should have like penciled in a game that he literally gives away. But to suggest that he would outduel Vasilevsky, even if Vasilevsky has a harder workload in every game, was probably pretty silly as well. So the fact that Kemper was kind of the biggest, not the biggest reason, but a big, big part of the fact that Tampa was able to win that game, get back into it, or at least the divide between the goaltenders was a big difference. Why? I think we should have expected at least one game where Tampa is sort of buoyed by the fact that they've got a way better goaltender.
And I think to that point, I was really surprised at the type of goals Tampa was scoring, because like even in game two, right? Like game two, like Tampa could not get close to the slot. Like Colorado was containing them, and there were goal after goal. I don't know what happened to Devon Toews on the Palat goal, but like a D-to-D pass between Toews and Makar. Like usually that's just like crisp clean, and then just like it falters. Passes are being made and there are goals being scored right in front of Kemper. So like the Palat goal, the Nick Paul goal, where he literally just like like snowshoes to the slot and is like is completely open, just fires it off. So I think, you know, to Justin's point, like the speed is definitely comes up, but I think just the fact that like Colorado was just giving way too many players time and space to just do their work. Again, like Pat Maroon versus Jack Johnson. Like I saw that, I laughed so hard. I was like, oh my God. Like that's a tough one. So like I think if it comes down to the idea of Colorado being better in game four, I think it's because Jared Bednar will like see, like, okay, you see all this stuff you did here. So I don't like any of this or any of that, or actually any of it, because that's not what we've been doing the last two games. So like everything that happened in game three, chuck it, and we'll move on to game four, because goaltending was definitely a big difference, but I think also just like the play style and the leakiness was a lot stronger from Colorado that I think we've seen in the playoffs so far.
Which is kind of what's funny for me is that Colorado from the jump did not look like the better team. And I think for about 60 minutes, like Tampa looked like the better team and they still scored first. And if it wasn't for a disallowed goal, they might've been up 2-0. Tampa could have easily had the best start of this series, but if it wasn't for like a, yeah, three even. Like,
I mean, they I think you jinxed them. You literally wrote in the group chat.
Yep.
You were like talking about
are we gonna go
their defense, and then all of a sudden it was like over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Done. 100% blaming Julian.
That's very fair. I also said that I didn't see the Avs coming back when it looked pretty bad for them, and I was right on that. So a broken clock is right twice a day.
That's one of the reasons why I'm kind of still skeptical, is because, okay, there was a goal called back that very clearly it was offside, but
yes,
if John Cooper didn't get 5 minutes to determine whether or not he wanted to challenge it, it could have been 1-0. Vasilevskiy made a huge, ridiculous save on Confer, I think it was, pretty early.
Yes.
Plus they got that early goal. As you mentioned, Omar, it could have been 3-0 early. And then what happens if it's 3-0? Like, even a bad night for Darcy Kuemper, they could probably figure it out. So it was really, like, it was hanging in the balance. It's hung in the balance against New York. It hung against in the balance against Toronto. And yet, as you mentioned, Julian, we should learn by now that it doesn't really matter if it's a really tenuous moment because the Lightning come through. So we'll see what happens in game four. Obviously, we're going to get desperation versus desperation, which is what we want. And we're going to learn a lot, I think, about the series and how long it might go in game four.
Shout out Nick Paul, by the way. Oh, sorry, Sam, you go first and then I'll go on my point.
I was just going to say, it's also, this is also a Colorado team that has historically just, take every so often they have to take a couple of games where they just dick around and like they don't play their best game. They skate around, it's messy, and that's what that game was. But you know, I think their longest, they had one 4-game losing streak this whole season. Like, how many of those games are they gonna play for the rest of the series? I guess that's gonna be the difference.
I mean, I think losing the way they did, probably a good thing, because Bednar can go in there and be like, hey, let's get it sorted out here for game four.
Yeah.
I had no idea we could say dick around on this show.
There were two options.
Underused, actually.
And I tried not to say the other one. So.
What was now I'm curious about what the other option was supposed to be, unless we really can't say that word. We really can't say that word.
The pause.
Let's just move on to Nick Paul. I thought that was really cool. The fact that gets banged up, dude looked as if he probably shouldn't have been playing in that moment, but looked pretty fine after that and gets a goal like almost like in the second period, just as he's like skating around looking to see if he's okay. Then Josh Mantz with a really brutal turnover. Then Ross Colton finds Nick Paul in the slot, that play you were describing earlier, Omar. I thought that was a cool story. I know playing through pain, it's kind of like a hit or miss thing, but that's one of the cooler stories you could find, especially in moments like this where you have everything to play for and you play through pain and you make it work. I kind of like stories like that. Not if you're like playing through like a ruptured spleen or something like that.
Yeah, that'll be a top 10 moment of the series for sure. And I think it's, man, if you're a team that like goes back and forth on like, hey, should we like acquire a player at the deadline or like give up assets, do it. Man, people thought for the most part that Nick Paul would just be like, oh, you know, like a depth you know, contributor, and that's it. But Nick Paul has been like a standout, which is crazy to say on a team like Tampa. Has been a standout on this team in the playoffs. Like, again, he's scored, you know, scored both goals in Game 7 against the Leafs. He's scored a lot of huge goals, and again, to watching him like literally shuffle to the slot and then score. It's huge. So like it's great for him, but again, like if I'm Jared Bednar and I'm angry at any goal, it's that one. I'm like, how does that happen? Like, how does that happen? He's wide open. Why he could have broke dance and like spun on his head ball like before scoring. So like if there's one play from game three that like that Colorado should be looking at and like reminding themselves of and then using that as motivation to improve for game four, it's that play, because that can't happen.
Yeah, there's like a telltale sign of the Lightning when they're at their best, and it's like literally everyone is like half needing crutches and or a stretcher. Like, it's like they just have a parade to the penalty box or the penalty box, the locker room when they're on. It's just like it's like so obvious what, you know, it requires for them sometimes to be at their best, and it's pain a lot of the times. I mean, it's partly a broken down team, but partly a team that's like, okay, clearly we have to go that extra mile, and that's another example. And there's going to be a couple examples, it looks like, with Kucherov a little banged up, Paul a little bit banged up, at Point maybe coming back. Like, this team has been through it, but they seem to get galvanized by going through it, which is interesting.
I think they said Point's doubtful for tomorrow.
Yes.
And yet they were better, at least from a lineup standpoint, without him.
Do we want to get to the Kucherov thing? Because before we got on air here, Omar seemed very,
I think we do,
very into that topic. So Nikita Kucherov leaves after taking a cross check from Devin Toews at the end of game three.
John Cooper said some things, say, hey, those guys knew what they were doing. I didn't necessarily think that much of that quote, but Omar, for those watching on, not watching on YouTube, he's beside himself. He's rolling his eyes. Like, Omar, you know what? We should have like a segment where we call it Let Him Have It, because he likes to have like these moments for himself. It's more of a Leafs thing, but like, I feel like you just have to give Omar a moment where you just kind of let him go. So I'm just going to let you go, buddy. Go ahead.
Like, okay. I just want to preface by saying, I understand that coaches can't like openly say like, my player did something stupid or my player is doing this. I get that. But like, John Cooper coming out and saying like players know what they're doing, like, so pretty much implying that like Devontae's like accidentally on purpose or maybe even purposely did what he did to Kucherov. It's so stupid, because you're talking, you have Nikita Kucherov, a player who is almighty and skilled, top 10 player in the league, has been a top 10 player for a long time, but is a player who loves to straddle the line between okay and very not okay a lot. Playoffs, regular season, it doesn't matter. So like, it just irked me hearing him say that the guys know what they're doing, because like, it just seems like he is very picky and choosy as to whether, okay, this is actually the player's fault, maybe the player knows what they're doing, versus, oh, things take place, things happen. Case in point, I'm going to make this about the Leafs. I'm sorry. I forgot if this is during the regular season or in the playoffs, but there is a moment. No, this is a playoffs. It was one of the games where the Leafs are destroying them, and Mitch Marner and Kucherov collided, and then Kucherov did this like 360 spin thing and then clipped Marner on with his skate. Now, at the time, everyone's like, oh, well, you know, it's just an accident. He's just spinning, this collided, right? But you're watching it, and it's like, okay, sure. But also, I think that also could have been stopped earlier. So it's just like, players do it all the time. Your players do it as well. So I don't like the whole, like, oh, the entire arena knows what happened. So the fact you have to ask that question, just, like, stop it. Stop it. I understand. You want to protect your player. That's your star player going down. That's another player going down. I get it. But like, stop. The two things that irritate me as when it comes down to like hockey lines or hockey cliches, that's that in correlation with, well, I'm not trying to hurt anyone. Okay. Oh, flipping K. They're sure. In a contact sport, we're not trying to hurt anyone. Okay. Okay,
that
sure.
That could be true. You could try to get out of the way of not trying to hurt people. That could happen.
Okay. So cool. So was Corey Perry just like, you know, blessing ankles? Huh?
No.
That's the best part is like, you signed Corey Perry and that's what you want to complain about? You want to complain about Devon Taves? Like, come on.
Right?
Like, Darcy Kuemper must have stories from this entire series of what it's been like dealing with Corey Perry. And
honestly,
it's been 3 games in.
And again, like, I get it. He's a coach. He's going to stand up for, I get it. Bruce Cassidy had to coach Brad Marchand when Brad Marchand decided to lick people. I understand. I get it. But
that's
like, but it's just like, it's irritating to watch that, because again, knowing that like he has players on his team that are historically known for doing things accidentally on purpose. So anyway,
see, you've never been. Go ahead, Kath.
I was just going to say, you're right about it being self-serving. Like, he wouldn't say that if it wasn't a member of the opposition that made that play or that hit. But I almost saw it differently. I thought it was like sort of an admission of guilt a little bit, because he knows that his players do things like that. The Lightning are the best, dirtiest team on the planet. And I think, like, if it was really a truthful moment, it'd be like, yeah, players know how to take a cheap shot when a cheap shot presents itself. And I think that's exactly what it was. And him saying that good players know what they're doing, was that the right quote? If good players know what they're
like
doing, player, out there,
players know what they're doing or something.
His
like
players
that.
Know
I feel
what
like
they're
I
doing
should get
too.
The exact quote.
Mm-hmm. His players know what they're doing too. And I think if you got him in a moment that it wasn't like him burying one of his players, he would say, our players know how to do that stuff as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I will say, I think it's it probably irritates. I think Avs fans will love hearing Omar say that, because I think the one thing that Jared Bednar actually does differently than other coaches is when his own players make dirty plays, he doesn't try to pretend like they aren't. And I've seen Avs fans get so mad about it. Like playoffs last year, I can't even remember what the quote was, but at one point he basically acknowledged like somebody should have been suspended. And I think there were Avs fans who were angry that he did that rather than, you know, making a big stink about the officiating. And it's just, it's an interesting approach.
Bednar definitely tells it like it is. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't play any games. Doesn't necessarily protect at all costs. He just would say what's on his mind, which is pretty respectable. Yeah.
Omar, have you ever been in a situation where you're like playing a sport like ball hockey or ice hockey, or whatever, and your teammate is in the wrong and they do something wrong, but you have to defend him anyway because that's your guy? And you might have to be like, yo, man, like, you know, I that literally happened to me like last week.
No, I get it.
that literally happened to me in a soccer game last week. I had to like defend my guy even though he was in the wrong.
No, I get it. I understand.
I mean, every beer league team I've ever played on has had a guy who just acts up every season. Yeah. And you kind of just have to put your head down and get out of there. But it's your job to kind of at least not actively oppose him in the moment. You kind of just have to let it go. But I don't expect John Cooper to bury his guys, especially right now.
No,
I don't know, man. That perspective is why Jordan Binnington goes around and fake punches people.
But that's what they do. I think the Blues just threw it the other way. But you can't tell him. I mean, you can't like punish him. They might be like, "Yo, you just threw the water bottle. Like, what are you doing? He's your starting goaltender. You gotta be like, yeah. All right, just hit him with the bottle next time. Don't embarrass everybody."
That'd be the highlight of a documentary. Like, why did they lose that series? Like, Binnington would be like, you know what? I felt like I was ready to come back, but you know, the coach is what went up to me and just called me an idiot for, you know, for being stupid.
Had to throw that water bottle. You know who hasn't scored a goal in this series? Not to make an abrupt change here, but you know who hasn't scored a goal in this series that I think is worth talking about? Yeah. Are we at that point where we have to be worried about that? Because like he has assists, but like he has no goals in this series. Like,
I was actually going to come at it from the other angle. Like,
yep,
they've had a highly offensive series where arguably their best player has not performed and they scored 7 goals in game 2. Like, all you need is one breakout game from Nathan MacKinnon and this turns again. Like, it's, and the chances of him not pulling it together at some point, I don't think they're that high.
Yeah, and if there is ever a moment, man, if there is ever a moment, it would be game 4. Like, we've seen, like, Stamkos and Palat kind of being, the chain reaction for Tampa this playoffs. Like, man, MacKinnon scores, like, that'd be game-changing. That'd be huge.
Like, imagine the Oilers if Connor McDavid scored no goals in 3 games.
That's curtains.
Exactly. Like, I think that's why that's the... another difference between the teams right now and why I like would favor Colorado is like, they still have a card to pull. They still have the Nathan MacKinnon game coming. I think Tampa's like sort of exhausted its resort. Like, you know, you could expect Vasilevsky to maybe steal another game and have another big night from Stamkos or whoever, but like they are full value for their entire team so far. And then we're waiting for that Nathan MacKinnon moment. I think that's another potential swing in the series is when he comes to life, which I think we all expect him to do.
We just need like a Nathan MacKinnon zone entry, cutting through the D, snapping a shot, and we could put all of that to bed. He just needs to do it once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think he needs to do it for himself too. Like, I think it's like, this guy, it burns really hot with this guy. I think he's trying really, really hard, probably too hard.
Yeah.
If there's a difference between him and Mikhail Makar, it's like effortless with Makar and it just comes to him. And Nathan MacKinnon's really, really pressing. It seems like he doesn't have to. He just has to play his game and it'll come for him. But you can't really tell him that. I'm sure Jared Bednar's tried.
Mm. Yes.
You know who else hasn't scored a goal is Mikko Rantanen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. That's what, yeah.
He did a lot of points, though.
Yeah,
he's got like 3 assists in the seven goal game, I think.
Yeah. I think he's got like 7 assists, but no goals yet.
That's not bad. At least he's contributing. It'd be worse if it was like you have 0-0-0-0-0 on your stat sheet.
Yeah, man.
If you're in a series like this and you have like no points or like 1 point, you're either like a third pairing defenseman or you're just not very good.
And it's not even that for MacKinnon. He just clearly wants a goal. He admitted it after the game. So,
okay. For the Conn Smythe, I know I've asked you guys for your picks through 3 games. Why is Val Nichushkin the front runner for the Conn Smythe trophy? Or do you have someone else in mind who is more deserving?
I mean, it depends how the rest of the series go, man. But Vasilevskiy,
I mean, yes, but like through the first three games.
Listen to me. That save that Vasilevskiy made on JT Compher was some upside down Stranger Things level goofery. Like, like he makes the first save off the deflection and then the extending one. Like my jaw dropped. So, but through the three games, yeah, I think probably Nichushkin, just because he has kind of come up with those really clutch moments. It's odd, man. Like, I don't know. That's probably the first one, but like, yeah, like I think it's just because when it comes down to this series, I've always said it's going to come down to goaltending, and it's like I'm watching like both goaltenders, and it's just like, okay, how many like game saving moments have you had? So I don't know. Maybe might be a little too easy. I did have McKinnon initially, so yes. You know, maybe hopefully that changes.
I don't know. We've been talking about the Conn Smythe Trophy for too long to have not mentioned Cale Makar's name. He is the massive, massive favorite. He's going to win the award, I think, if Colorado wins. I don't even know how you could deny him. He's been the best player throughout the entire Stanley Cup playoffs for Colorado. He was awesome in game two. He's been burned a few times in this series defensively, though I think it's been more Devontae's than Makar, but they're out there together regardless. I don't know. I'm not looking anywhere else than Makar if you're assessing the Avalanche's chances to win that award. I think it's him.
All right, Sam, now it's your moment to gloat.
I picked Cale Makar, and I think he wins even if they lose.
Preach. Ooh, 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 ooh. Preach.
Even if they lose.
Preach.
Okay. GS he may deserve that, but that's not going to happen.
GS Jaguar status. That'd be sick.
Sorry, he should win even if they lose.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good way to hedge your bet.
I think the Lightning one is interesting. I Vasilevskiy struggled. He just they hung seven on him the other night, but like, how are they going to win without Vasilevskiy? And if Kucherov's out with injury, is it like Stamkos next? Is Palat next? I don't.
That's why I think Makar should win it. Like, they don't have a clear.
Yeah,
that's a pretty good point. That's a very good point.
But I will say Vasilevskiy is going to have to do game three things if they're going to win three more times. So he might emerge as the guy before the end of it.
How many goalies have won a Conn Smythe, and how many of them have allowed seven goals in a cup final and won a Conn Smythe? Vasilevskiy might be the first.
He might be.
Yeah.
He might be. His numbers are going to look good regardless, though.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
man. Sam's right.
Omar, what are you looking at?
Cale Makar is still leading the playoffs. Well, okay, of teams that are still left. Yeah. Like it's still McDavid and Draisaitl 33-32, but like Makar has 26.
I was clearly making a funny with the Nichushkin thing, but yes, Cale Makar is the front runner. Sam is always right. We get it. Congratulations. Your pick is you're right. There's a reason why people should agree with you and not get in your way on Twitter. We get it. We understand. last final thing on game four. Where do you guys see it? Just basic prediction. Is Colorado winning game four? Is Tampa tying it? How do y'all see it?
I think Colorado will come back and then get the 3-1 lead. Now, do I think it's going to end in game five? No. But I do think because there's a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes from Colorado that we saw in game three, again, if you can watch the game back and then and say like, okay, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad, then those are just fixable moments. And again, like it was a very uncharacteristic game for that team. And yes, the whole difference in goaltending has been a big thing, but something that we established is that if Colorado plays their game and again holds Tampa from getting those opportunities, which they did, which they were doing to the series up until game three, then they're fine. Then they're golden. So it just comes back to whether they get back to that style of play and don't let Tampa dictate the pace, which I think was a big difference between the beginning of the series and now, is that before they were skating like crazy. And again, to Sam's point earlier, they're making Tampa look like an old, tired, withered team. So if they can do that, then they win. Otherwise, then it might be tied and we're going to Colorado 2-2.
I think Colorado's going to dominate the game. I'm not sure if they're going to win it or not, but I think it's going to be a really, really good bounce back effort from them. If that's, you know, if all things are equal, goaltending front, and scoring chances, so on and so forth, I think it would be Colorado's game, and maybe they have the chance to win it at five, but who knows? I should not count out the Tampa Bay Lightning again, but I'm going to. I got the Colorado Avalanche in game four.
Sam?
I think the Avs win game four, but I think it goes to overtime.
Ooh.
Oh, I would love that so much, actually. That would be. Oh, that would be such a perfect time for Nathan MacKinnon to do it. Have the Nathan MacKinnon game. You score the OT winner. You bring the game back, bring the series back to Colorado with a 3-1 lead. I'm kind of rooting for that. If that I think happens, Colorado will win game four too.
If that happens, the series is over in five, in my opinion.
You might as well bring it. Okay. Let me not say that you might as well bring out the cup then, but like we could at least like dream about that if that was the case. But we can't write off the Tampa Bay Lightning. They could easily tie this series and who knows how they react in games five and six.
Mm.
And like, and then maybe a seven if it gets to that point.
The longer the series goes, the more likely we are to see Nazem Kadri back. So
that is also very true. That is also very true. But will Nazem Kadri be at 100% to play though if he comes back?
Man, no one's at 100% now. That's one of that's like that's
close, close to it because like the Lightning had Braden Point in for the first two games and he wasn't as effective. They won the game. They didn't need him.
Yeah. Mm. It took him out because he couldn't help them the way that they needed him to.
Yeah.
So that same could be said about Kadri as well.
But I can see Kadri like coming back into the game and just going like Babcock style, like where he was just like full on, just like, I'm just going to hover over you and just like make your life as miserable as possible. He may not be able to score, but he'll probably like hover over Stamkos and like Cirelli and Palat and just be like, you're not scoring, man. Like, I'm not scoring and neither are you. So like, I can see that.
He would certainly help there. I mean, if there was anything like different about game three, it's that, you know, that top Tampa line with Kucherov and Stamkos and Palat, they got free a little bit of the MacKinnon line and that really hard matchup. If they're playing against Compher, they're going to have their chances and they took advantage of those chances. But Kadri, he can be one of the best defensive centers in the league. And even if he's just shadowing, like you mentioned, Omar, it could be a big get.
So you're listening to this podcast or watching this podcast on a Wednesday, which means the NHL awards will have already happened. Which means, because considering when we record these, we actually recorded before the awards, so it'd be kind of risky.
Austin Matthews.
It's like there's a
chance. I'm surprised it took us this long to talk about the Leafs.
Yeah, you know, seriously, it took us. So I showed restraint this week, Sam. All that to say, because we're not recording and we know all the award winners at this point, it would be a little irresponsible for us to kind of talk about that. Instead, I decided to bring out the Zonies because we did that at the midpoint, gave out some awards for some players, some plays, some things we liked, things we didn't like, things we loved to dunk on and all that. An end of season Zonies. So I have some categories. You all can give me your picks for each of them. And let's just do the damn thing. I'd like to start with your hockey Twitter moment of the year. There are no shortage of nominees for this particular category. I am excited for this one. Who has a pick who wants to start? I can start if you'd like.
Give nominees. Yeah. You want to send some nominees out there? Or?
So, like, the Kodak Black incident. we gotta talk about that. Because the NHL and the way that they reacted to that, that was definitely something. The alleged infidelity of a player and another story that went out. Look, the all alleged.
Those are my top two.
A lot of people reacted in a certain way to those stories.
I have two.
Very notable. Yes, please. Please.
One. Leon Draisaitl being called pissy.
Oh my god! Yes.
And also, and as an honorable mention, the morph of Kevin Weeks becoming a meme from breaking all the news. Those two, but yeah, Leon Draisaitl being called pissy was so. I could not believe this was happening. I thought I was in a simulation. I'm like, are we actually watch an NHL media call a player? Ask him why he's acting so. Oh, dude, that was so funny. funny. That's my highlight of the year. That's my
hockey. Do you have a hockey Twitter moment of the year you'd like to
offer? No, I think Kodak was the one for me. I think that's definitely. I mean, it's just like it was just so ridiculous and so hilarious, and like the breaking down the film, and it was too good. It was awesome. Oh
my God. Took some moves from Brampton, huh?
He knows. He knows.
The sensible pick would be to, I guess, everyone reacting to Trevor Zegras doing the dish again, because, like, you know, that was still a play that got everyone going. Like Michael B. Jordan, obviously, and other celebrities who you wouldn't even think would be associated with hockey. They all notice.
I would argue the aftermath of that moment was even funnier.
Oh, yeah. And how everyone reacted.
Considering, listen, NHL, if you can do one thing, I need every team to make a pact to score a Michigan goal on Philadelphia and then just pan to the camera immediately. I think I will go out of my way to watch every Phillies game and every Flyers game just to see if anyone tries to do it, especially.
I'm not going that far, but Anaheim Philly might actually be worth watching.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. 100% watching that. Cause you know, Zegras is going to try to do something. Like just try. Oh, yeah, you guys got to skill it up. Oh, skill it up. That's another one too. Don't skill it up.
That was another one. Oh my God. Yeah. I gave that something else. But I think
I enjoyed that The Athletic called them the worst broadcast in the league.
Oof. I didn't say that. Sam said that. So it's either pissy or the
Kodak. I didn't say it. The Athletic said it.
The Athletic did say it. I work for The Athletic, so shout out The Athletic. Appreciate The Athletic and working for that great company. So it's down to Pissy and Kodak Black, really. I don't know if we can do a tie. I don't know if we have to vote on these two, but I think those two are probably the strongest ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think those are the moments.
Yeah.
I think that's it. For the first time ever in the history of the Zonies, a tie for hockey Twitter moment of the year. Leon Draisaitl being called Pissy and Kodak Black doing whatever the hell he was doing in that Florida suite. What about player of the year? So just anyone you thought was really good, just it's like our MVP, I guess, or MOP, or if you want to look at it that way. Player of the year. I still think, even though he will not win the Hart Trophy, but considering what he did throughout the regular season and in the postseason, career numbers for this dude and goal of the year candidate. We didn't even talk about the goals that he scored this year, making Patrick Nemeth look like a dummy. Connor McDavid is my pick for player of the year.
Man, there's so many.
I mean, a lot.
The beauty of player of the year is that it doesn't go by the Hart Trophy rules, right? So I voted Auston Matthews Hart Trophy. I'm going to say Connor McDavid's the player of the year because he clearly had a way, 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 way better postseason. He accomplished something that Matthews the accomplishment there. He's just unbelievable in the playoffs. It's what we've been waiting to see. And he was clearly almost a coin flip sort of proposition for the Hart Trophy. So I think the best player in the league, Connor McDavid. Sure. Let's go with that.
Yeah. So any votes for Auston, any votes for Kale, or are we just all unanimous with Connor?
Kale, man. Kale ended some souls, man.
Oh, he did.
Kale could be Norris, Conn, and Stanley Cup winner by the next time
we record. The first could be him too. Defenseman since Brian Leetch to score 110 points in the regular season. And some of those goals were outrageous. Like I'm giving it to Kale McCarr.
Has anyone seen Kirby Doc since that goal he put up? No,
he's dead.
Also, fun fact about Cale Makar, only one other defenseman in the history of the National Hockey League has averaged more points per game in the postseason than Cale Makar has.
No.
And it is arguably the greatest defenseman to have ever played the game in Bobby Orr.
Mm-hmm.
Like
another honorable mention for Hockey Twitter Moment of the Year.
Yes.
the Flyers pretty much saying they goofed and not taking Makar fourth overall. I'm like remembering all these moments, like as we talk about other things. Good times.
You know what would have been a Hockey Twitter Moment of the Year if the NHL stood by their guns and let this happen Wes McCauley doing that damn AMA on Reddit.
Oh my God.
That would have just won everything. That would have been one of the greatest days on Twitter.
He wouldn't answer a single question. He would wait for like the comment of like, oh, hey, Wes, you do a great job. And he'd be like, oh yeah, thank you. You know, let me tell you all the stuff about refereeing. And there'd be all these like questions that like would not be answered. That's why like when they canceled, I was like, yeah, good, because they wouldn't answer anything. Like what?
You know what would be a great moment on hockey Twitter is if someone could get footage of Bobby Clark hunting down Ron Hextall and two-handing him across the ankles.
Yo, what is going on? Sam is just pulling up from the top rope, just wanted violence. Jesus.
That would be funny.
And on Ron Hextall, too.
He's the one who took Nolan Patrick.
We know he did. Oh my God.
You know Bobby Clark has thought about this. Man. You know he's thought about it.
At least like chewing him out. I don't know about going so far as Tanya Harding, the whole situation, or Nancy Kerrigan.
It's not the first time Tanya Harding handed someone Kerrigan across.
Listen, man.
The bar.
If I was the GM of the Philadelphia Flyers and I went over the 2018 draft and I was like, who did we take again? And I was like, okay. And you play the game of who was taken afterwards. I don't know, man. I think I might two-hand him too. I'm not going to lie.
Okay. Before we start getting ourselves in trouble for getting two-handed or whatever, do we have a pick for worst take of the year? I was going to give it to Tyson Nash for saying that if you skill it up, you skill it up, you deserve to have your ass handed to you. What a dumb take that was. And what a dumb double down, triple down, whatever. Dude, like, just a very brutal take. We want more Trevor Zegras's. We want more skilling up. We want less Jay Beagles trying to give retribution. And Tyson Nash validating that was stupid. I think that's the worst take of the year. And I'm someone who originally gave it to Rocky Wirtz earlier in the year at the midseason point because he tried to make everyone forget about the Chicago Blackhawks situation.
That was my answer.
Not forgetting about that. Absolutely not.
Yep, that was my answer.
That was my answer.
We're not going to talk about 2010, but you're going to hire 2010 players to help with the GM search. Give me a break.
It's hard to beat those two. I will say, like, who's been giving the most worst takes all year? I mean, Tim Peel in media is.
Yes.
I think he's piled a few up. I'm bracing. You guys know that I'm bracing to be called the worst take artist of the year because I didn't include Igor Shesterkin on my heart ballot. So I'm bracing for that right now. Maybe I didn't put enough thought into it because I'm trying to keep the thoughts positive, brother.
That's a problem you're gonna have to live with, brother. Yeah, when the Hart Trophy is about to be announced, I need you to tweet the Jon Snow gif where he's just taking out his sword, just tweet that.
I want everything to be just. That's the problem. I didn't know that like even with the Lady Bang, I had like Jersey fans because I gave it to Jack Hughes. Like celebrating me for picking Jack Hughes. So I know it's going to be like 10 times as bad for a negative thing. So I know it's coming. And I believe the Rangers fans will be pissed. I'm just hoping that I'm the only one that didn't not have him on the list.
Jeez, man. The New York and New Jersey, you're going to have some really interesting mentions for yourself.
We shall see.
Story of the year. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious with the Kyle Beach story from earlier in the season.
Yeah.
Just how everyone's responded to that. And ultimately, I'll say this, like, I know on this show, we've been able to cover that story and Logan Mailloux and a few other more interesting COVID. Obviously, when we started this podcast, we were still in a pandemic, but maybe I'm being optimistic here, but I'd like to think that the Kyle Beach story, if nothing else, as horrible as the details were, I'd like to think that people who are interested in hockey and hockey stories at least learn some lessons in terms of coverage and how they view hockey stories going forward. And the people who are able to ask questions when the opportunities come to speak to Bill Daly or Gary Bettman. That is my biggest hope in all this, that we're not just going to, but then maybe some people have learned a lesson, but I feel I have, or at least I want to be better with coverage of those types of stories. So that's my hope, that younger people who are getting into this game will realize, and the game of media, I mean, will realize that it's not just about a box score. It's not just about writing a feature about some player. Mm-hmm. There are real stories like that and real harrowing and horrible stories that happen underneath the undertow of the league or junior league or whatever. And these things happen and these stories need to be told. So I hope people take that lesson.
I think that's a very powerful thing to say, Julian, just because when it comes to like reporting on hockey or the NHL, like it goes beyond like this team has to do this at the deadline or this thing in free agency. I think one thing that we definitely have seen this year is that these aren't just players. These are people and they have lives and they have experiences that unfortunately have been swept under the rug in many ways, shapes and forms. And I think that was the most disappointing thing for me when it came to this, the Kyle Beach incident. One, the fact that we know who Kyle Beach is, that yes. brave, that interview he had on TSN, which was unbelievably brave, just 100%. Talking about it. So I think hopefully, you know, to your point, Julian, that this, you know, opens and also continues to open the eyes that of things that are taking place within your professional sports leagues. Yes, every professional sports league has its things, but there are things that, you know, I think that I guess takes a lot of journalism and a lot of bravery to go through. And, you know, like I think back to like Rick Westhead, you know, Katie Strang, you know, being so two of like the, you know, the shouting figures of this whole thing. But then Rick Westhead wasn't allowed to ask a question until like 50 minutes of the thing with Gary Bettman. So
it took like Pierre LeBrun to call to make mention of it.
Exactly. So I think even though, you know, they're not always the ones who are getting the praises, I think they're doing very, very important work. And I hope that continues. Now, not to say that I hope more of these things take place. I definitely don't hope that, but I hope that more people are given the space and given the, I guess, the avenues to be able to tell their stories or at least get some type of justice or retribution for things that take place. Because I don't, we have to move away from a place where winning is more important. And hopefully with this, hopefully, again, I know there's now this new investigation that's taking place, unfortunately, but
yes,
hopefully it changes. Hopefully.
So go ahead, Sam.
No, go ahead, Dustin.
I was just going to say that Rick Westhead's emergence as like a really trusted, reliable source that's going to be on the ground at all times, digging up information, but also being someone that people are comfortable going to mm-hmm. with their stories is like a really important development in this industry. And that it's not to say that there weren't people that were doing that work before, but this sort of standard that's been set here recently and what he was able to do with Kyle Beach and his reporting on that, it's like given an outlet, an important outlet that maybe didn't exist before and certainly didn't exist 10, 15 years ago. So I think that's a major, major development and story of this season is that there is something there. And of course there are other reporters involved as well. But I feel like his work really opened the door, I think, for other things to be explored further.
100%.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think to Julian's point earlier that you would hope people have learned things from the coverage of the Kyle Beach situation. I'm with you. I think young and upcoming journalists, I hope, have taken lessons away in terms of what we had hoped to see from hockey insiders and kind of more established names. The coverage of the Hockey Canada stuff isn't really making me particularly hopeful. Like That's a lot of the guys who were like, yeah, I've learned about the Blackhawks thing. I'm going to use my platform. You know, I scrolled through the PHWA international members yesterday. It's all the people who have always covered these issues. The Athletic story that Dan Robson, Katie Strang, and Ian Mendez did was commendable. But again, those are the guys, those are the writers you expect to see writing about it. Mm-hmm. In terms of covering the Hockey Canada testimony before Parliament yesterday, not a lot of big names. Ken Campbell has done a pretty good job since he left the Hockey News, and he's doing a decent job on his own platform. But other than that, there were not a lot of big names covering that parliamentary testimony.
Mm-hmm. That's a very fair point. And also I should mention too, it's one thing to call out the media and hope better from them on this. We should also expect better from the organizations in charge of these players and hope that they don't suffer any more of these abuses. If there's one entity that deserves to have their foot at the fire. It's National Hockey League and junior leagues and coaches and other teammates and players. It's one thing to look at the coverage. It's a whole other thing to look at the people responsible for these heinous acts. So I'm glad we were all unanimous on that particular story for that category. A bit of a tone switch for the last one, but this is my favorite category of all the zonies to do. The zone time moment of the year. My pick for zone time moment of the year is when, during the second round of the playoffs, when we discussed the alleged story of the Florida Panthers going out to a strip club for a game, and we were all making jokes about it, and Omar inadvertently cracked wise about it and had no idea what we were talking about.
I had no idea. I thought it'd be funny. I was making a joke.
Oh, it was.
I had no idea what took place. I read the article afterwards and I was like, oh, holy crap. So yeah, that's really funny.
That's my pick for zone time moment of the year.
Mine would be, so Julian has a knack of setting me off on a rant and just sitting back and watching. Definitely funniest one, he sent me on a Leafs rant and then whipped out popcorn and then just started eating it. That's my zone time moment of the year. And of course you have to go back to the beginning of the year where he did the bait and switch with Rahef and I, making it seem as if, you know, the Leafs were the ones that had the most pressure or would around. It actually ended up being the Florida Panthers, and I took off my headphones and I walked away.
At least the Panthers won a round.
Anyway.
Cut, Sam, do you have moments you want to share with us?
My Zony went to Avery for pulling up the golf club, and I don't know if anything stopped it yet. So I'll just call back that one.
I've got two, and they're both Julian. I think I think the top moment was you pulling out the broom.
Yes.
When the Oilers sweep. And somehow on the graphic on the YouTube, it's like Avery's face right above Oilers get swept. That whole sequence was really well done. And the other was when you tried to roast Omar for bringing up the Leafs, but actually you brought up the Leafs.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
It's not always me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. We don't have to always bring up the Leafs. We don't always have to have Leafs Corner. I am humbled and honored that I won all of these imaginary zonies I have in my arms. Flattered you would think of me for this, but I always enjoy doing the zonies. Second year we get to do this. We pretty much are done with this week's episode of Zone Time.
Thank you.
This is the first time we get to actually hear on wax what one Justin Cuthbert thought of a particular High School Musical movie. He did tweet about it. He did watch it. I did give him access to the Disney Plus account so he could watch it. But I think it's one thing to read the tweet. We got to know your thoughts, brother. You got to let us know what you thought.
Listen, it wasn't all that bad. I was feeling a little under the weather, so I decided let's fire this up because, you know, I at least have time to get through something, at least use my time wisely here when I was on the mend a little bit. But it wasn't that bad. I thought there were some holes in the plot. I don't know how we got to this, like, they were just hanging out at, like, this cottage thing, and I wasn't really paying attention early. And they met and they sang, and then all of a sudden they were in the same school randomly. Didn't really understand exactly what happened there, but it was a great love story. I love the message that you don't have to be just one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can have many talents, and you can show your friends that it's not just about one thing or trying to act cool. It's just being passionate about what you love. And Troy Bolton loves sports, basketball. Yes. Troy Bolton loves music and singing, and Troy Bolton loves Gabriella. And
I don't know if it
falls apart between them in High School Musical 2 and 3, but I hope it doesn't because it was a beautiful love story. I will say, though, anything Sharpay related can go. I didn't like any of that. And
damn.
But damn. Yeah, it was, I'm a Troy and Gabriella guy. I didn't mind it.
What was your favorite song from the first movie?
Get Your Head in the Game was, you know, by far the standard.
That's a pretty good pick.
Are you going to see if they're still together in High School Musical 3?
I'll have to lose another bet, I think.
Let's save that for next year.
But another, it was a great message at the end. I mean, it was all tied together. They were talking about the playmaker being so important. And Troy, I don't know what her name was, but she was the show runner. Or she was the, I don't know, she wrote the play, I guess, or wrote the music for the play. I forget what her name was, but she was the playmaker. She put this all together, and Julian puts this show together for all of us.
What?
He's the playmaker of Zone Time.
Guys.
So to give him more than just zonies, he's also our playmaker.
Which guys, is, guys.
As,
guys,
this... worth, as high an award I can give.
Mm-hmm. Guys, this is too much here, guys. I didn't do anything notable to be worth all this praise. But we thank you for honoring that bet, because this is something that we were all looking forward to. And we are all satisfied. So now the only other time you hear a High School Musical again is when Omar will make reference to it, which probably you can pretty much count on him doing that. Probably next week or something.
Yeah.
All right. That's going to do it for Zone Time this week. Thank you, everyone, for watching or listening wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe to the podcast. Of course, please do that. And we'll be back next week with a brand new episode. We'll see you then. Peace.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.